It's Your Money with the investor coach, Paul Nichols, the show that pulls back the curtain on the financial services industry and exposes the truth about the traditional financial planning model. Paul believes education plus understanding leads to clarity and confidence that can and will lead to peace of mind. He uses simple solutions grounded in academic research from leading financial minds at Harvard, Yale, Princeton, and the University of Chicago, including several Nobel laureates. You do not need to know everything if you have an investor coach teaching you the few right things. Paul Nichols is the president of Financial Abundance, a registered investment advisor. He is a member of the National Ethics Bureau, the Better Business Bureau, and member of Strategic Coach Quarterly. Get ready for some common sense clarity coaching with the investor coach, Paul Nichols.
Good morning and welcome to the show. I hope this finds you well on this holiday weekend. Good morning. It's great to be with you. My name is Paul Nichols, your host for the next hour. Joined by Luke Miller. Good morning, Luke.
Good morning, Paul.
We are coming to you as we normally do every Saturday morning. It's Your Money is the name of the show, where we collectively pull back the curtain on the financial services industry and expose the truth about money and investing. We believe education plus understanding leads to clarity and confidence that can and will result in peace of mind. So we're really the doctors of discernment, the professors of the profound, okay? The captains of the contrarian. No, that wouldn't be accurate.
No, you lost it.
Yeah, anyway. I hope this finds you well. Hope you had a good time with your family in this holiday weekend. It's always great to see family, the in-laws and the outlaws for the most part. But anyway, hope you had a wonderful holiday. We got, you know, this is one of my favorite times of the year. We got football. We got food.
What else could you really want?
Well, you know, and then, of course, friends and family. I mean.
Oh, yeah, those two.
It doesn't get much better than that,
the
really.
The four Fs.
And, of course, it is always a time for Thanksgiving, but especially in this time of the year where we reflect a little bit on how good we really have it. And I hope you do have it good. I'm sure there's people out there that are having challenges and struggling at times financially and otherwise. And let me just say this to you, and I hope this creates some comfort in this holiday season. My friends, this too shall pass. My wife, when we were younger and struggling to get by, you know how it is when you're a young couple, and she would be a little harried and overwhelmed. I would always say to her when I could tell she needed it, you know, this is a temporary situation. It's not always going to be like that. And it is temporary, both the good and the bad, you know. How you doing this weekend, Luke?
Doing well, very well. Just like you said, with friends and family and eating food and watching football.
Yeah, I love that. Well, what are we going to do today? You know, we got a little input from a client last week, coupled with an article that I picked up out of the Wall Street Journal when I was in New York City last weekend. I happened to grab the paper. And when you're in a hotel, you know, you got plenty of time to read. So I thought this was interesting. The name of the article, this was in the Sunday-Saturday edition of the Wall Street Journal, 14th, 15th of November. Have you learned your lesson yet? Which is interesting. But what this did was, it's kind of a test, so to speak, that the paper gave, a bunch of questions. We're going to pull some of these out and just talk a little bit about them. But we were with a client this week, and we had brought up the subject of the radio show, and he had made a suggestion. He goes, you know, a lot more people are novice out there than you might think. And I think there's a large group of people out there that would be willing to invest, but no one's really ever taught them.
No one really just explained to them the details.
So we want to spend a little bit about talking about that today.
I think that's a great show.
We're going to talk a little bit about why to invest, when to invest. Well, not so much when, but when's always.
When is now.
Yeah. And then how to get started. So if you are fairly new to investing, a younger person or an older person that was never really had an interest in this type of thing, I think this show may be a great opportunity to get some basics on, you know, how you should be prepping your mind for investing and so on. But let's start with some of these questions, which I thought was interesting, Luke.
Certainly.
We're not going to do a market update this week, by the way. We're going to defer that to next week. But this is interesting. What percentage of surveyed workers said that in the wake of the financial crisis, they still plan to retire on the original schedule. What percentage, Luke, would you say it's 21, 31, 41, or 51%? These would be people that were surveyed that still plan to retire on the original schedule.
I'm going to guess, boy, it's got to be low. Let's say 31.
That's right. That's right, 31%. Oof. Only about one-third of workers, according to a survey in September by Bankrate, Inc., said recession hasn't affected their planning retirement date. One in five workers said they anticipate leaving the office between 1 and 5 years later than first planned. So it's affected two-thirds of people, I guess, right?
The well, at least
one-third.
Or it depends on how well the one-third has planned either way, too. They may have planned really well, or they may be pulling the ostrich move and just burying their head in the sand.
Well, that's interesting, because there's one question that addresses that. How about nest egg? This one's interesting. What percentage of workers age 55 plus, have nest eggs totaling $250,000 or more? So this would be your IRAs, your 401ks, your individual accounts, your SEPs, your 457s, 403bs, your entire investable assets, not your home. These would be your investable assets. What percentage of people have $250,000 or more? 26, 36, 46, or 56%? 55 and above have $250,000 put away.
Well, it should be higher than it is, I'm sure of that, but let's run with a low number again. Let's say 26.
That is correct. 26%, only about one quarter of workers age 55 plus have savings and investments, excluding homes, and your pension stream, your income stream, of $250,000 or more, according to a nonpartisan employee benefit research institute based in Washington, D.C. More worrisome, 59% of this group reports having less than $100,000 in their life savings retirement nest egg.
Wow, for life savings, that's not a lot of money.
Well, you know, I can't really be the judge of that because everybody's situation is different, but I understand where you're coming from as far as a number. Yeah, when you think about longevity, what it is, $100,000 is not going to buy
what
it used to.
Right.
Yeah. That's kind of interesting. What percentage of workers said they left the workforce and retired earlier than planned? What percentage of workers said they left the workforce earlier and retired earlier than planned? Would it be 27, 37, 47, or 57%?
I'm sticking with what got me here. Let's go with 27. Start with the first one.
It's actually 47%.
47%.
Yeah. Almost half of workers, according to the Employee Benefit Research Institute, ended up leaving the office earlier than anticipated. Primary reason, this is interesting, Luke, the primary reason, health problems or disability. Guess what percentage that affected?
Oh, it had to be huge.
42%. 42% of people left early due to health problems. So that's interesting.
They didn't necessarily want to retire. They retired because...
Let me qualify that.
Okay.
Let me qualify that. And changes in their company, including downsizing. So,
okay. So, basically...
Well, no, that's 34%. I'm sorry. Let me back up. The primary reason, health problems and disability, 42%, and changes at their company, including downsizing or closure, 34%.
Sheesh. So, 70-plus percent retired early, not because they wanted to, but because they... saw no other way out.
So 47% of workers said they left the workforce and retired earlier than planned. About half.
Right.
Yeah. Here's another interesting one. An analysis of trading behavior over a two-year period in 401k plans found that the greatest percentage of workers made a change to their accounts once during 2 years, twice during 2 years, once every quarter, twice each year, or never made a change. These would be people that are managing their own 401k plans, you know, through work, picking the allocation.
I have no idea.
Okay, the answer is never made a change.
Never made a change.
Which is interesting. Looking at a group of 1.2 million workers in more than 1,500 retirement plans, a report from the University of Michigan, I'm joking, found that fully 80% of workers initiated no trades in their accounts during the two-year period. 11% made only one single trade. Now, we're all about not making trades.
Right.
However, for the overwhelming majority of retirement savers, according to the report, there is no evidence of portfolio rebalancing.
Which is pretty important.
This is a point of concern, yes. So, people aren't managing their 401ks.
No. And maybe people just don't think about it.
They don't know how.
It's just there. They wouldn't know where to put the money.
I mean, look, we've all looked at those. It's a guess. It's a guessing game. You know, I mean, you can try to do some research. Yeah. All right, last one. What percentage of workers and or their spouses have tried to calculate how much money they will need to save for a comfortable retirement? So what percentage of couples, workers and their spouses, have tried to calculate how much money they need to save for a comfortable retirement? 34%, 44%, 54%, or 64% have put pad to paper, Luke?
It should be 100, let's go optimistic. There was 54%?
34, 44, 54, 64.
Let's shoot with 54.
It's actually 44%.
44, more than half of the people have not.
44% of workers and or their spouse have never tried to calculate how much money they will need for a comfortable retirement.
Okay, I misunderstood. I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry, have tried.
They have tried.
So 54% have not.
Have not tried. More than half have not put pen to pad to see what they need to retire.
And this is from our course that we do, by the way, same outfit. Fewer than half of the surveyed workers in 2009, according to the Employee Benefit Research Institute, had put pencil to paper, a fundamental step in effective retirement planning. So, obviously, there's a lot of people that are ill-prepared or don't know where to prepare or maybe don't realize they should prepare. I don't know.
Let's hope that's not the case. But, you know, it can be daunting and you know, it's one of those things, I'll get to it tomorrow. Well, next thing you know, you're retiring and you're in a situation that could have easily been prevented.
So let's help some folks out there today, Luke. What we want to do is talk about, and we're going to run out of time here quick in this segment, and we'll bleed over into the second, but why should you invest? I mean, why should you even attempt, especially with all the negative news you hear about the market and, you know, the downfall
the
of
losses
man
last year.
And the fact that we're going to fall into a hole and, and all that kind of stuff. You know, I mean, it's a lot of it sensationalism, you know, what you hear on the news. I call it, the shell of lies. It's the shell of truth stuffed with lies. The shell of truth stuffed with lies. We have to be more cognizant. We have to practice more discernment than we've ever done before. We do not have a lack of information in this country. We have a lack of clarity in this country. In fact, we have information overload. And it's like my dad used to say, you don't know whether to squat, spin, stand up, jump. You know, it's sometimes like that. So a little bit about why. Why should we invest? Well, compound growth, obviously, is a big part of why we should invest. There are really two main reasons why you should invest. One is to stay ahead of inflation.
Okay, well, that's a fair answer.
Buying power.
Right.
And the other one is to achieve your financial goals.
So whether it's buying a house or retiring or vacations or whatever it might be.
Yes. And so when we're going to take a break, when we come back, we're going to talk about the penny double 30 days story, which is a great example of why you should invest. And later we're going to talk about a little bit about how to and how to start a program if you haven't already. You're listening to Paul Nichols, the Investor Coach, along with Luke Miller, host of It's Your Money. We'll be right back. If you need a second opinion, you know where to get it, right here at Financial Abundance. We do that sort of thing all the time. If you get a set of recommendations or a proposal from an advisor, get a second opinion. We are happy to provide it to you. If what you are doing you're not sure about, or you're not certain about the fees, you're not certain about the risk, you're not certain about the diversification, you're not certain about the redundancy inside of the fund, you're not even sure about the fund itself. Are you doing what's suitable for your situation? If you're not sure, ask. We are happy to help you figure it out. Just call us anytime during the week at 814-867-5745 or check out our website, financialabundanceinc.com. Again, it's 814-867-5745 or our website, www.financialabundanceinc.com. Welcome back to the show. Once again, this is Paul Nichols, the investor coach and your host, joined by Luke Miller, the insurance man extraordinaire. For those of you who may not know, we really haven't talked very much about your background, have we, Luke, most of the
time? Well, we did a couple weeks ago, but as far as my function as not only your cohort here on the radio station, but also at the office.
Yeah, a lot of people may not know you're the long-term care guru.
That's kind of my thing, but you know, I owe it all to you. You've taught me everything I know.
Oh my God. All right, let's move on.
In the industry.
We're talking about investing on this particular show, some basics about investing, how to get started, why you should even do it, these types of things. I got some feedback from some clients and articles that I read, and I got the feeling and the sense that there are a number of people out there that would like to invest. They may not know how to start. Maybe they've never learned some of this stuff. And the fact of the matter is, where are you going to learn it?
Well, that, and they maybe just don't see the value in it. Maybe, you know, throwing
well,
money,
with all the negative stuff.
Burying money in your backyard might sound like the best alternative until you know all the facts.
Well, let's talk a little bit about investing. One of the things that, of course, I realized as a young man in my different mentorships, mentors that I've had to work with, one in particular, having no money background at all, coming from a poor background, and I didn't necessarily have a father that was a business person or a family that were business oriented, so money never came up.
You didn't have the only money problem you had was having enough.
Yeah, we didn't have any money. So, but one thing that one of the first things that really caught my eye was this penny doubled every 30 days. A friend of mine offered me the option of $1 million, hypothetically, $1 million or a penny doubled every day for 30 days. Which would you prefer? And I think the penny doubling every day speaks to the idea of compounding.
Mm-hmm.
And also speaks to the idea of saving. And is it worthy? Is it something you should do?
And it shows you how something as minuscule as a penny, well, let's get into it. What happens to
Well, go ahead and start with the story. This is a story you picked out, I guess, from a Sharon Michaels, The Power of a Penny Doubled.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, it starts like this, and there's a bunch of variations of this story. I'm sure a lot of you have heard it, but we'll go on with it. One day, a rich merchant said to his young son, "Son, I have an important question to ask you. Think carefully before you answer this." And the boy, as a good boy, says, "Yes, father." So he goes on to say, "I will give you the total amount of one penny doubled each day for 1 month or $1 million cash right now. Which will you choose?" Father asks with a sly grin. The son answers without hesitation, $1 million, of course, father." Wise father looks at the boy with a knowing smile, takes out a paper and pen and says, "Son, come sit next to me and learn a lesson about wealth and patience."
Faced with the same question, which would you choose, $1 million cash or a total of a single penny doubled each day for 30 days? Let's study the power of a penny doubled. Let's go ahead and look at it. So we're going to take one shiny new penny or an old rusty penny, makes no difference, still worth a penny.
Still the same value.
And double it each day for 30 days.
Okay, so day one you have one, day two you have two, three you have four. Or you have eight, and so on.
Then after a week, you have 64 cents. So this deal isn't looking too good.
So
for
far, the $1 million is looking pretty good.
Yeah. After 10 days, a third of a month, yep. You have five, what is it? How much is that?
$5.12.
Okay. But now after 2 weeks, still nothing to jump up and down over. What do we got? 14 days.
Whopping $81.92.
But we're starting to see some action now, you know, because we're starting to get big enough where it's starting to compound there. And when we look at 20 days in,
It's up to 52.42 and 88 cents.
So let's say I said, "Look, I'll give you a penny doubled every 30 days or $1 million." And on the 20th day, the penny doubled would amount to $5,200. Would you still take the million or the 5,200?
Well, that math is a lot easier to start doing, but the million is still looking pretty strong at that point.
So after 28 days, a short month, what do we have?
Over $1.3
million. $1.3
million.
So if we go to 30 days, we'll have $5.3 million. And what's interesting...
And if it's a long month, throw it into to 31 days, you're talking...
$10 million.
Over $10 million.
Now, I know this doesn't happen in real life, and there's no real lesson and moral to be learned. But the speed at which money grows can be amazing, even if your savings or investments are small and minimal right now. Start somewhere and watch your money grow and multiply over the years and months to come. But there's also a powerful lesson about patience and not giving up before payday. Let's say, for example, you decide to take your money out on day 7, 17, or day 27. You wouldn't have the same results, would you? Wealth building, and for that matter, let's just call it security building. I think wealth elicits for people that have a meager lifestyle that they can't save and invest and be knowledgeable.
I can't get, you can't get, the impression is they can't get to that point.
Yeah, and ladies and gentlemen, just so you know, we have a number of clients from the whole social economic spectrum, and I'll tell you, oftentimes, whenever we look at someone or a situation, we always overestimate their ability and underestimate our own. And oftentimes, it's our own self that holds us back. This really, this gets more into Ken's area of expertise, Ken Pash.
We're stepping on toes here.
Yeah, Ken's the leadership coach that comes on after our show and Unlocking Your Potential. And that's exactly what he teaches, the title, Unlocking Your Potential. But let's just call it the retirement building is about the discipline of having plans and developing the patience to stick out that plan until it comes to fruition, which is exactly why most people don't necessarily need an investment advisor. They need an investor coach. A lot of times we don't necessarily see, well, I don't want to say that. We do see a lot of portfolio problems, but that's not the biggest issue we see. We see more people problems than portfolio problems.
Right. Once you fix the people problems, everything else falls into line.
And what we mean by that is people make an irrational, uneducated decisions because they don't have all the information at hand.
Or what they perceive to be educated in decisions based on bad facts.
Right. So what's the moral of the story? The next time you see a penny on the street, bend down and pick it up. You never know. You could potentially be holding $5 million in your hand. So I think this, to me personally, as a younger man, spoke volumes to me because it started getting me thinking, you know what, this power, this duplication, this concept of compound interest, which Albert Einstein, who we arguably is one of the most intelligent people that we need to talk about intelligence, right?
That walked the earth.
Yeah. You know, he called compound interest the eighth wonder of the world. So when you invest, here's the way I look at it. And my wife and I talk about this every so often. For every dollar we spend, let's say frivolously, for lack of a better term.
Eating out when you might
whatever,
not need to.
You know, although it may be justified. For every dollar that we spend, it's $3 we don't have down the road. So we want to talk a little bit about how you might acquire some monies that you may not think you have to invest with, okay?
Okay.
And we're going to give people a couple ideas. We have to start with the 30-day challenge because, folks, unless you're willing to take this 30-day challenge and be honest, to thy own self be true. Who said that? Was that William Shakespeare? Or some paraphrase, I paraphrase. Thou shalt not fake thyself out. That's Paul's 11th commandment. You know, if you really want to prosper, learn how to invest and build an account, you have to start with an honest foundation, and that is the 30-day challenge. You want to explain what the 30-day challenge is, Luke?
Well, it's a great baseline, and essentially what it is you take and you note every penny you spend for 30 days.
Document it.
You document it. You write it down, whether it's a stick of gum or it's a piece of electronic equipment, CD.
A cup of coffee if you're a smoker, a pack of smokes, tobacco, whatever.
Whatever
alcohol,
it is.
You know, if you whatever it is you spend, you know, if you buy a toll or whatever it is. And the idea here is just write down every penny you spend for 30 days. Now, this came from a challenge that I was given when I was about 25 years old, a very successful individual, friend of mine who was my mentor at that time, said, listen, you spend more money than you think. And I said, man, you are crazy. I am a good steward of my money. I don't spend frivolously. And he said, well, write down every penny you spend for 30 days. Oh, well, no problem whatsoever. Ladies and gentlemen, I was shocked after 30 days. Even on a limited budget and limited income, single guy at that point, I'd spent about $100 that month, more than I thought I did. And it was on little things. It was on just the littlest things, you know, a cup of coffee, a pack of gum, you know, a Danish in the morning, or a grabbing a roll or whatever it was, you know. And so that really changed my thinking because I realized there was $100 a month I could save.
Mm-hmm.
Without being crazy, you don't want to go to the point where, you know, I don't believe that you go overboard. I don't believe, let me share this with you. I learned this is a great, great statement, especially for someone like my wife, who's a bit of a perfectionist, okay? Strive for progress, not perfection. Strive for progress, not perfection. Look, don't go out and start a budget and get all wacky and you're going to do this, that, and the other thing and just set yourself up to fail. Just strive for a little progress this week.
Baby steps.
You know,
small maybe, successes.
Yeah, if you buy a cup of coffee every morning, maybe miss one day. Wait till you get to the office or whatever. Just, you know, and if everything's screwed up and nothing worked this week, then start over every Monday. That's my rule. Start over every Monday. And look, you know, progress, not perfection. I learned that from Dan Sullivan, by the way. Got to give him credit for that. He's a strategic coach out of Chicago, all over the country, written many books. And I got that phrase from him. And wow, what a difference it made in my life, because I realized there's no such thing as perfection. We just want progress, right, Luke?
And I guess that kind of builds on the success builds success. So as you get these small victories, then it makes it easier to make the changes because you see the value in what you achieved.
Yeah. So the 30-day challenge, start with that. Now, once you get done with that and you've documented what's going on, what I'd like for you to do is take a jar, put it somewhere in your bedroom, your dresser, or whatever, okay? And that money that you did not spend that day, because now you're cognizant, okay? I spend $4 on a Frappuccino, all right? I'm not going to do that because now I'm cognizant that costs me $80 a month. Now when you come home, drop that $4 in the jar. And at the end of the month, take that money, and that's going to be found money that you're going to start and add to your investment program.
That $4 means more to you all of a sudden than that Frappuccino did.
Yeah, we need to teach people to learn how to conserve rather than consume. We automatically are all consumers.
Mm-hmm.
How do we learn to conserve? Now, some of us are wonderful stewards of our money. Some of you guys out there are a little too tight, let me be honest. You need to loosen up for your wives a little bit. But, I mean, I'm being honest, right? And I see it. And then some of us are too loose. Now, the best way to figure out, you always want to begin with the end in mind. You've heard me say that all the time, right, Luke?
Yep, you say that in the office on an almost daily basis.
If you're going to do something, I don't care what it is, begin with the end in mind and work backwards from it. So if you're trying to save an extra $1,000 a month, how do we figure it out? Well, let's look at the 30-day challenge, first of all. Let's look at paying yourself first. Now, if you recognized that you've been able to save some money, and a good way to save money would be some different audits, right?
Right. Well, and we've talked about those on the show regularly. We can do a life audit for you, especially if your life insurance is older. If your cash value life insurance is older than 5 years old, you may want to do an audit because there's a good possibility you save a bunch of money.
We might could save some premiums. You want to look at your auto insurance and
your
homeowner's insurance and your health insurance. And by the way, we have resources of people in town, credible business people in town that would be happy to do those types of audits. But these little things, you pick up $50 here, $100 here, and you did a...
I did a home and auto audit through a gentleman, and ended up saving me an actual $500 a year.
Well, so there's $500 more a year that you can put into your investment account. So for the lack of time, we're running short on time. We're trying to give you ideas. 30-day challenge, figure out where your money's going. Go ahead.
The other thing to find money is your taxes. Don't pay more tax and think you get this big windfall in the spring of every year. If you pay only what you need, and then you have that money to work with throughout the rest of the year.
So how do you do that? Well, if you normally have a family of three and you take three deductions and you end up with a refund, you can go into the HR department and say, hey, I want to deduct 6 or 7. That's totally within your right. And they just take tax out. The idea is that you have more money throughout the year.
Right.
Now, if you get a tax return, the last place you should be doing is buying TVs and consuming with that. Really, if you're serious, that should be found money that's put away. Now that's not for me to be judgmental about. I'm just trying to help you. For those of you that want to invest, I'm giving you ideas.
Or if your month-to-month is tight, that's a good way to find some extra month-to-month money. But you can't obviously expect the large return in the spring.
Right. So another thing you can do is if you pay quarterly payments for insurances and other payments that give you a discount for an annual payment, what I suggest you do is, here's how you do it. You start writing the quarterly checks, put them in the envelope, and at the end of the year, you have 4 checks you've written, and you just send it in as an annual payment. You save yourself some money there.
Of course, that only works if you actually balance your checkbook, too.
Well, that's true. So these are just some ideas. When we come back, we're going to talk about, okay, now we found a little bit of money. What are we going to do? In fact, remind me when we get back, we're going to talk about a HELOC, because that may free up some dollars for people. Paul Nichols, the Investor Coach with Luke Miller. We'll be right back. Do you own stock in the company you work for? A lot of workers do these days, and in many cases, you can buy company stock at a discount, which is great. But if you're not careful, you could end up having too much of a good thing. Look at your total investments. If your employer's stock is more than 15% of your total assets, think about selling some of it. Consider this. Institutional money managers rarely invest more than 5% of their investment into any one stock. If the pros won't do it, why would you? You might like your company, but having a lot of your money in one security is aggressive, speculative, and could be dangerous. Let us help you make the right investment decisions for you and your family. Just call our office at Financial Abundance, 814-867-5745, or check out our website, www.financialabundanceinc.com. That's 814-867-5745. Back to the show. Good morning. Happy holidays. I hope this finds you well. You're listening to Paul Nichols, the Investor Coach, joined by my cohort and co-host, Luke Miller, who's been doing this for a little while now. Luke, huh? It's getting to be, you are in your family. You're the big radio host now, the big fancy schmancy dude.
According to the kids, I work at the radio station.
Yeah, the kids, that's all they know. Kids are funny.
One day a week, I do this, and this is what I do.
Yeah, that's what does your dad do? Oh, he's a radio guy. Yeah. It's funny.
It could be worse. It'll be worse.
Well, leave it at that. Yeah, we're talking about investing, just some basics on investing this show. We're trying to attempt to encourage people who haven't started an investment program to do that. And then we talked a little bit about where to find some money. Now, the 30-day challenge we talked about, getting some audits done of bills that you normally would pay and see if there's a way to save money on any of those. Now, any money that you find, it's not found money to consume more. That's found money to conserve, and you want to earmark it for conservation and just forget about it.
Right, because you were doing well, or you were getting along without it. So now that you found it, you need to put it to work for you.
It's just like, I'll give you a great example. Buy a car. Now, when you pay off the car, keep making those payments to yourself.
Because you're accustomed to making that payment.
That same check to yourself and put it in your savings account or your whatever account you're going to put it in. Yeah. So, you know, some of these things, you really got to you gotta figure out sometimes where to find money. People say, oh, I have no money. Well, if you have $200 or $300 in credit card debt a month and you have a car payment of $300 or $400 and you have another payment of this, that, or the other thing, and you own a home and you have some equity, looking at a HELOC, a home equity line of credit, may be a great option for you as long as you're using it to get yourself back on track. Now, what I mean by that is, let's say you have $10,000 or $20,000 or $30,000 worth of debt and you can go out and get a home equity line of credit, it's probably going to be at a lower interest rate than you're paying on that debt.
And?
Okay. And you can also deduct that interest as part of your home mortgage. So if you took a $20,000 debt, let's say a home equity line of credit, and let's say you decide to pay it off over 3 or 4 or 5 years, and it's, you know, $500 a month instead of $750 you've been paying, well, you found $250 a month that you can put, that you've been putting out, that you can put toward your savings and your investments. Okay.
And you could talk to Brian Allen, who's going to be on in a little while, about that exact same thing.
Yeah. And Brian can certainly help you with that cash flow and understanding, you know, those types of things. But these are things, little things, nuances. And this is why sometimes, folks, if you're not familiar with this stuff, you got to get some coaching and you got to go to professional people to help you. And your finances is no different than seeing a doctor or an accountant or a plumber or an auto mechanic or your dentist. I mean, all these are things that are requirements, not luxuries. Would you say your dentist is a luxury or a requirement?
It's a requirement.
It's the same with your financial future. It's no different. So if you're ignorant to these things, it's not an indictment onto your intellect. You just have not had anyone coach you or teach you about them. Okay. And it's not as mundane and dry and as blasé as you might think it is. You know, it's fun to learn about how to do better. It's fun to apply those things, and it's fun to see the results of that education.
That's
moving
usually
forward.
The most fun, I think.
Exactly. So then, all right. So They realize it makes sense to invest. They understand compounding. They understand the concept of a penny doubled every 30 days. They understand there may be some dollars they can squeeze here or there. They understand when they pay off of something to keep paying that money to themselves, do the 30-day challenge, look for money, start to become just more cognizant of where your dollars go. Pennies add up to dollars. Go ahead. You had a point?
Well, and I was just going to talk about, you mentioned credit cards a little bit earlier, and if you're not in a position to take a HELOC, a home equity line of credit, pay those off as soon as you can, even before you start saving, I think, because
consumer debt's number one. Do not put money away where you owe people money still. It doesn't make sense.
Especially if it's 18%. I mean, it doesn't make sense to invest and get even 10 or 12% when you're putting out 18% over
and even a smaller percentage than that. I mean, really.
Well, that's to make a point, but you want to get rid of that. That unsecured debt is hurting you more than anything else.
And you know what? Once you get out of the debt, slice up all those credit cards. Just keep one for yourself and one for your spouse. And I'll tell you how you don't get in debt again. Here's how you do it. Every month when you get your budget, you don't use credit cards anymore except for
stuff you're going to pay off.
You have to use it.
Use it and pay it off the next month.
What you do is if your entertainment budget for the month is $200 or your whatever your thing, you get an allowance. My wife and I, we give ourselves a set number of allowances and stuff toward that, so we know exactly what our budget is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, start taking the cash out for the month, and you won't be pulling that credit card out anymore. Because I'll tell you, it's a big difference whipping that credit card out and handing that plastic over versus peeling out greenbacks.
Definitely. Well, that's why casinos use chips.
This is true.
They're smart about it.
One of those little interesting
nuances.
Now, all right, so let's talk about the spectrum of what you can invest in, by the way. And you know what? I wanted to go over some returns that have gone on, which are really probably surprising to a lot of people. Luke, we have just a matrix here, and this is taken from 1973 to 2008. It would include the horrible 2008, 36-year time frame, and it shows us the number of years the market's been up and down and so on. And what's interesting is, out of 36 years, okay, the worst scenario was how many negative years? 11 negative years in U.S. small stock, 25 years up. So what it does is it takes each asset class, like U.S. large companies or U.S. small companies or international large or international small or bonds or T-bills, and it shows what the annualized return is, how many positive and negative years, and what the amount of risk is for that. And the only point I wanted to make on this, Luke, is the one-third bias we talk about that. Can you elaborate on that?
Well, the one-third bias is pretty simple. It's relating to investing in securities. And if you're invested in
what is a security? Let's let everybody know.
Stocks, mutual funds.
Equities. Let's call them equities. Stocks, bonds, mutual funds. These would be forms of equities or debt instruments.
If you are invested in any of those, typically 2 out of 3 years have a positive return. And 1 out of 3 years has a negative return. Just that simple.
That's what we see in the market. You know, everything from in a 36-year period, depending on the asset class, 9 to 11 years down and 25 to 27 years up. So, I mean, that's just
that's
what
right
we're seeing,
there.
The way
right.
it's always been. People love volatility.
When it's up.
Okay. So when we start to look at what can we invest in now, all right, we've decided we're going to trim a little bit. We've decided we found $50, $100, $25 extra a month. We understand that it makes sense to invest. And, you know, whether you're 20, 30, 40, 50 years old, 60 years old. Now, what do we do, Paul? What do we do with it now? Okay. We've carved out $100 a month. Now, what do we do with it? Where do we invest it in? That, to me, is the biggest challenge most people have especially people that are more novice or are have limited funds to invest.
Sure.
It's more important that they understand what they're doing.
There's a lot of tools and a lot of places even within those tools where to invest.
So you first have to start out with a couple things. First of all, do I want to invest in a qualified type of account like a Roth? Or do I want to put it into an after-tax account or put it into something like insurance, for example? So the first thing we have to look at is at how much risk do we want to subject this money to? Now, risk is directly related to the amount of cash that you would have in any type of investment. So when you look at the whole investment spectrum, now this is real basic, Luke. The whole investment spectrum, it really boils down to two camps, if you will, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's the fixed camp,
which has no
risk
no risk
downside.
Of loss. Yeah. No loss. It could earn very little or nothing.
It may not keep up with inflation, but it has no actual losses. Okay, so those fixed accounts would be a checking account.
Okay.
A bank CD.
CD.
A fixed annuity.
Okay.
Which is just an insurance. It's like a CD with a longer maturity, and it's with an insurance company.
Same concept.
A little higher yield, okay? Mm-hmm. Then you can get into the highest yielding fixed account that I'm aware of. This would be fixed account, would be a fixed indexed annuity, which is indexed. I'd say it's like a fixed annuity, but it's linked to...
So it's going to mirror...
The S&P 500.
Or another index, should you...
Yeah, in very simple, simplistic terms, don't take any of this. This is not investment advice we're laying out here, ladies and gentlemen. Tools available, okay? So you can invest in the fixed arena or in the variable arena. The positive to the fixed arena is you're limiting your losses in accounts like checking or CDs or fixed annuities or indexed annuities. But you're also limiting the potential for gain.
Right. And in some cases, a fixed annuity or a CD, you're limiting some of your liquidity of the money. You can't necessarily access it.
Yeah, it may not be as liquid. When you get into the variable side, there's really three predominant areas you can put your money in. You can put it in stocks, which would be ownership of companies, mm-hmm. and bonds, which would be debt instruments of those companies, right?
Right.
Stocks would be actual ownership of the company. A bond that you bought from the company would issue would be a debt instrument that you've bought to get the interest.
Right.
Okay. But
you're loaning the business money.
Basically.
The company
okay?
money.
But in the market or in the potential, in the area where you could lose money, you got three predominant areas. Stocks, bonds, okay, one mm-hmm. area. Mutual funds, which would be families of stocks and bonds.
Be a group of them together.
In essence. Or variable annuities, which would be the chassis of an insurance product that has sub-accounts that are in the market. Now, whether you should put your money in fixed instruments or variable instruments really depends on a number of factors. Not necessarily age, not necessarily social economic level, not necessarily those types of things. To me, it's really in one area, and that is when do you want to retire and yeah. how much money do you need when you retire?
And how much do you have going into
starting with, yeah. So a good place to start, obviously, is funding your 401k at work if they match it and only if they match it.
And no more than the match.
And if they don't match it, then I wouldn't suggest you put money into 401k at work. Well, I would suggest a Roth. To me, Roth is the first place to start. Max out your Roth. Beyond that, I personally like the idea of cash value life insurance and concepts like Misfortune or Bank on Yourself. These are books that you can get online. Misfortune 101 or Last Chance Millionaire or Bank on Yourself or the infinite banking concept, okay? So it's a mixture, but everybody's going to be a little bit different. Now, because we're throwing this information out there, and this is really kind of like a public service that we're offering this next part, for the first three people that would either call our office or send us an email through our website, financialabundanceinc.com, or you can go to the WJCTV website, whatever, okay? And you say, hey, I'd like to request the advisor guide or the 7 Deadly Investor Traps. These would be great tools to start with your education.
Now, the 7 Deadly Investor Traps is a CD?
That's a CD, audio CD, and the Investor Awareness Guide is a guide. The first three people to request each of those will send them complimentary. We'll even pay for the shipping, no cost. All we request is that you read them, and listen to them, and pass them on. Okay? But we got to have, you know, obviously your contact information is where to send it. Okay? That's all kept private and confidential. But I'm going to do one special thing, and for the first person that notifies us or requests it, and we're not going to do that for anyone else, and I'm going to offer a complimentary investment analysis. You want to talk about that?
Well, first of all, I'm blown away. You've never really offered that on the show before, complimentary. So that's a... That I can recall.
Well, because we charge a fair amount to do that.
Well, and a lot of times it's not enough, but that's not the point. We charge $500 for each one of these that we do. The value to it is so much more than that because it does break down your investments. It lets you know what's inside of each one of your mutual funds.
It shows fees and all the
stuff. It breaks down a
lot of stuff you would definitely want to know. And because we're running short of time, let me just say that Luke and I are part of a growing number of professional people in this country that are seriously concerned about the direction of our company or country, whether it be tax-related, longevity, information, lack of education. And, you know, we really have a goal to save the world one investor at a time. There's about 300 of us in the country that are strong into the academic approach to investing. And we believe you don't need to know everything if you know the few right things. So I'm going to put my money where my mouth is here. Offer that. But, you know, unless you're serious about this stuff, just don't play games. You know, go spend your time doing something else. If you really want to learn and get coached up and move forward, ladies and gentlemen, we got the information for you. You know what? We got to move. We're done. Have a great holiday weekend. We hope this finds you well. We'll talk to you next week. It's been Paul Nichols and Luke Miller with It's Your Money. Have a great day.